Well, I'm here in the studio, and the rabbi hasn't even put on his headphones. He's sitting around on his phone, just looking at
squash. Are you bullying me?
I'm teasing you.
Are you making me feel bad about myself?
I'm teasing you like your wife teases you. Ooh. There's a difference between teasing and bullying. We should have a podcast about that. What do you say? And how about our producer, Mike, who's just a bystander, just witnessing all this and not stepping in?
I feel very uncomfortable right now, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to stop in and stop it.
Well, you have a responsibility as a member of this society, whether you're a humanist or a Christian or a Jew, to jump in and do something.
All I learned from my parents on how to stop it is to turn the lights on and off and go, stop it! Stop it!
That is a choice.
That is a choice.
You could do that. That actually might stop bullying. As you can see, that today's podcast is going to be all about bullying. Mm-hmm. That maybe if you're in class and you see someone or at work who's bullying someone, to start flickering the lights on and off. It might be the thing to Did your parents really teach you that?
Yeah, that's all we had. That's all they had to stop us as kids from doing bad stuff was to flip the lights on and off.
It didn't work?
Sometimes.
Yeah, flickering lights, seizures. Yeah. See that being a challenge and problem.
Just run and throw yourself out the window. That should stop whatever said bullying. So yeah, so today on the podcast, we are talking about bullying, and we're also talking about the bystanders that witness the bullying and don't do anything, which could be all of us in this room at one point in our lives. And at one point in our lives, all of us in this room were probably a bully at some point, and except the rabbi, of course. So we're going to get into that of just doing some good self-reflection on that. We won't try to pretend to be the experts on this at all, but we are going to bring in someone who's pretty well informed on this topic because he has written a musical with his wife on this topic called Speak Life, the musical. So we do have with us Mr. Dan Bird. Dan Bird, welcome to the show, my brother.
Thank you very, very much. I'm excited to be here.
How nervous are you to be in a show surrounded by a priest and a rabbi? Does it make you weird, feel weird, or is it just like, just another day in my life?
Just another day.
I mean, you've just made it weird.
Yeah.
Why are you bullying me?
You just made it weird.
I am weird, though. You expect that from me. I'm weird.
I don't really know why I do what I do anymore when all we have to do is go into the auditorium and turn on all the lights, turn them on and off, and then we'll be good.
That's it. It's done.
End bullying right there.
So people will come to see your show. You'll have a whole auditorium full of kids.
And we just start flashing the lights.
Boom. And this is what you do.
Bullying ends
in
that school.
Ends just like that. Thank you to Miggity Mike's parents for sharing.
Problem solved.
We don't even need the rest of this hour. We're done.
So can you just go into the White House and do that? Whoa, hey, hold up. Let's not get political.
Okay,
come on. All right. So we're going to get into the show. And thank you all for listening to this podcast, and when you like or comment, it actually helps our ranking on iTunes and Stitcher and all these places. So even if you don't like the show and you leave a comment, that helps us. So even if you bully us on our comment section, you're actually helping us because you know, all press is good press for just kickstarts like us. So thank you for listening, and do share, do comment, and leave something on it. And we're going to get into the show with Dan Bird from All Access Productions with his musical that he wrote with his wife, Speak Life the Musical. And this is a rabbi and a priest coming at you.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Hey, good morning, Stuart, Florida, and anyone else who can receive this signal. Maybe Vero Beach on a good day, but definitely not West Palm Beach. But we are streaming online as well. So if you're in your car right now and you got to get to work, you're like, oh my God, I don't want this to end. You can also jump on to www.wstu1450.com and always check the podcast. My name is Father Christian. I am the priest. And to my right is the best good looking rabbi you've ever seen since the days of the Jordan River when rabbis just flocked to the water. Rabbi Durbin, it is so good to see you here early in the morning.
You know what I realized is that if you were to listen to our shows from episode one to now,
yes, sir,
you would be listening for over 2 days, 24 hours a day.
You do math.
For 2 days and 2 hours.
I appreciate it's like a good marriage. You're the one in our marriage who's very aware of the anniversaries, how long we've been together, our first date.
You say that, but who was the one who sent me a Facebook friendiversary to say congratulations? Look at us now.
Yeah, buddy, look at us now.
You did.
Yes, yes. So I don't know if we were a relationship, who would be the emotional center and who would be the head center?
Call in with your responses at 772.
If we were a Domo wedding cake, who would be the feminine, who would be the masculine? Let's just let that one sit there.
Okay, so
today on this show today, as you know, if this is your first time tuning in, I am a priest, and Rabbi Durbin is a rabbi, and we are respectively work at congregations here in Stuart, Florida, and we take on a variety of topics, always engaging with faith, and then we try to get into Judeo-Christian battles amongst it, just to give you good radio. But we really love each other tremendously, and what we want to talk about today is what is bullying. If you went to the Facebook page for A Priest and a Rabbi podcast, you saw that today's going to be about why. Why do we bully? But most importantly, though, not only why do we bully, but why in our society do we have this issue, not of just of bullying, but bystanders who just sit around and don't jump in? Because the statistics show, for those who do statistics on this type of thing, which is a lot of people now, since bullying is just gets more and more attention, is why are those who do jump in? Well, the bullying stops within, like, I've seen 5 to 7 seconds, 10 seconds. It works when you speak up, when you say something, and there's great examples of this, and maybe you've witnessed it yourself. So we want to get into that. This is a societal thing that's going on, what's in our culture, and then, of course, from a faith perspective, my gosh, where's our call as people of faith when we see bullying, whether it's cyberbullying, whether it's verbal, whether it's physical, as a faith community, what can your church or synagogue or mosque do? But also then you at your workplace, you and your family, you at your school, your call, your the call of God to jump in and not sit idly by. So that's what we're going to get to. But to do that, you know, the rabbi and I, we just can't do this on our own. We needed to fly in someone big. We need to find a big bird, the bird, Daniel Bird, from all the way from Long Island, but he also lives right here, from All Access Productions. Daniel Bird, you are a acting coach, director, producer, founder with your wife of All Access Productions, and you have a musical that you are leading the way on that's going to be opening up this Tuesday at Jensen Beach High School. Can you tell us about that, and why the heck would we bring you on this show for this topic?
That's a great question. Well, first, let me just say thank you both to both of you. It really is a pleasure to be here. My wife and I, we're just kind of normal people. You know, we grew up in the theater. My wife's a dancer. I'm an actor. And we recognized pretty early on that there were some issues that were happening. We had dealt with as kids. And you know, in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, I was just completely ridiculed, completely destroyed, and my spirit was just crushed and broken. But in 9th grade, I had some people who spoke some really, really positive words into my life that helped kind of change the outlook of how I saw things, and they just basically spoke life into me. And then as we were coming along our journey, we recognized that there was this problem with bullying. And so right after Columbine happened, we wrote this show called Speak Life the Musical, and we've been traveling around the United States with our cast and going into schools, and so far we've seen about 360,000 kids. Wow. All across the United States, 360 schools. We've toured in California and Indiana and New York, and you know, the response that we've seen has just been absolutely fantastic. But we have principal after principal after principal that it doesn't matter what school we go to, they all come up to us and they say, "How did you know what my kids were like? You know, you're from New York, you're not from here, you're not from Indiana, clearly, you know, like, how did you know what my kids are like?" And the funny thing is, it's kids are kids, you know, whether it was us back when we were kids or kids today, you know, they're dealing with the same things. They have these same problems. I think that the way they deal with them today and the, you know, the mechanism in terms of social media that they have to deal with them has amplified it and magnified it and made it so that it is really almost impossible to get away from. But, you know, the show was basically born out of a group of guys like us, people that were in church. And we got together as like a group of 50 of us in a room, sitting in a room, just talking about how we can do better on Long Island, how we can do some things better up in New York and kind of reach the kids out on Long Island. And, you know, one of the guy that was the director at the time of this, you know, organization that had put this group together, he played an audio clip from Frank Peretti, who's a Christian author, and he wrote tons of fiction books, but he wrote only one nonfiction book so far, and it was a story of his life growing up. And it just talked about him and his experiences with bullying, because when he was born, he had this, you know, these deformities, this large hump on his back, and his tongue was swollen and it would, you know, ooze. And it was just horrible, you know, reading about what was going on and the way that he was ridiculed and the way that he was destroyed. After this 15-minute audio clip that we were listening to, my wife and I looked around the room, and young and old, everybody was crying. Mm-hmm. It was just silent. Mm-hmm. Everybody was crying. And we, after the meeting, we kind of got up and we just kind of hung around because we felt like we couldn't leave yet. You know, something had to be done. So we went up to the guy who was running the meeting. His name was Jack. And we said, you know, Jack, what can we do? You know, and he looked at us and he said, well, you guys are the artists. Go do something about it. And so my wife and I got together.
Kind of spoke life to you guys.
Yeah, it did. It absolutely did. We got together. We went back and talked to our staff and said, we're going to do something about this. And so we sat down and we started writing this very basic, you know, outline of a show, put it together with some kids during the summer. And I think we probably went to maybe 16 places, a couple of churches, you know, in the New York area, a couple of community outreach places. And then somebody approached us. I think it was actually Jack, the same guy that kind of inspired us. And he's like, look, that you got to get this into the schools. This is where the kids are. It'll really help. And so he's like, look, I'll help you. And so we're like, okay, great. So we went back and we put this whole cast together and we go back to him. We're like, we're ready. Let's get into the schools. And he puts this huge, like, directory of schools in front of us. He goes, here you go, call all these. Wow. So literally for the next 3 months, we just called schools and pounded the pavement and just walked into school after school after school. And eventually it just began to snowball. And one school saw it and just couldn't stop talking about it. And the next school saw it, and the next school saw it, and the next school saw it, until finally we got invited to the International Conference on Public School Safety. We were keynote performers there. That happened out in Indiana. We were invited to perform for their anti-bullying conference and things like that. And so we've had, you know, pretty good run at what we've been doing and seen incredible results.
So let's first talk about, so people can understand the musical itself.
Yeah.
Is that the musical itself, and I've seen it. Mm-hmm. It's great. That you set up and that you set up a show where you do try to go exactly for all the sort like archetypes that you would see in a school.
Yeah.
And they're actually called, like, this person is called the all-star. This person is called the prom queen. But then you don't just do these archetypes where they're just surface level caricatures. In each person, you really always try to show they have this moment, whether it's a soliloquy, a song that digs into like their own personal demons, whether it's the popular kid or whether the kid who's just being, who's the loner. And so the show itself, is that it seems like what you're trying to do is you're like, I want any kid in that audience to be able to look up there and see themselves, to identify with someone up there.
Yes.
And you really try. I mean, that seemed very intentional. Say, we got to get every single type. And you've talked about how the names or the styles of all the different genres of kids up there changes as the show evolves. Because kids evolve, and this what used to be the grungy kids is now the scene kids,
yes.
right? And so you keep
and
on doing that.
Is to, almost over too.
Right, right, right. And so you have to constantly be updating the show to make
Absolutely.
It to really reach your audience well. If not, it's just going to seem outdated, and yeah. kids are going to be like, "Why does that guy look like Kurt Cobain?" They probably don't even know who Kurt Cobain is.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time we cast the show, and every time we tour, we head out into the mall and stalk some kids and walk through the, not really that's
not really joke. Yeah, seriously.
but we do our research. I have three boys, you know, at different various ages, middle school, high school, just graduated, and so we keep our thumb on the pulse of what's going on. We talk to a lot of students, and I think I don't think everybody can do this, you know. I feel like my wife and I are a little young at heart. We like hanging out with young kids and students, and just getting to speak into their lives and be a part of what's going on with them. But when we write the show, or when we wrote the show, yeah, every year we recostume the show and kind of keep everything up to date. So you had talked about the archetypes that we have. And so one of the things that we try very, very hard not to do is to create a stereotype. Hmm. We don't want kids to look up on the stage and go, "Oh, that's not me. That's not me." Because when you create a stereotype, it's almost like you're shoving something on them and they have to swallow it whole. And that doesn't happen. So what we try and do, and you actually use the word, is to create a caricature. Almost something where they can look at that picture and go, "Okay, I see that that is me, but it's not really, you know, I may have, my ears may be, you know, sticking out a little bit." So when you see somebody on the street who does a caricature of you, they'll exaggerate that your ears are big. And so you go, they're not making fun of that person. They're just like Jay Leno. He's got a long chin. You see a caricature of him and he's got that chin exaggerated. And so we try to create a caricature where a student sitting in the audience can make an emotional, empathetic connection to what's going on stage and see themselves in each one of the characters. And so the show doesn't focus on the victim. It doesn't focus on, and those are more character names that we give them so that they understand what their role is. But in the show, even the person who plays the all-star, or who plays the prom queen, or who plays the new girl, their names are, you know, what we use in the show.
Sure.
So
tell us about.
Hang on, sorry. Is the aim of the show predominantly geared towards high school students? Is it? Have you done it in elementary schools?
We specifically aim at middle schools and high schools. We've done a lot of colleges. We've done a lot of community theaters. But the themes that we talk about, are universal. They're mm-hmm. human themes. So everybody that has ever seen it, like if we've done it in a community theater, we've had kids that are in elementary school that come and see it. There's nothing that they can't see. It's not like it's too scary for mm-hmm. them, or we're, you know, it's got a rating they shouldn't be watching. It kind of passes over their heads. They can see, oh, bullying is wrong, mm-hmm. but they don't connect emotionally to the characters the same way a kid in middle school mm-hmm. or a kid in high school does. And the funny thing is, like we're going to be doing a community show at Jensen Beach this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. And what we'll find is that we'll have middle schoolers, we'll have high schoolers, and we'll have adults up into their 70s and 80s that'll come and see it. And the adults are the ones that have the most visceral reaction. We've had people come up to us in their 70s, barely able to speak to us after the show, and they're just so emotionally moved because they've lived with this hurt for the longest. They mm-hmm. recognize that the words that are spoken to them. I mean, literally, we were in Indiana. We pulled into our bus broke down. Our coach bus broke down, which was a regular occurrence. And if you've ever been on a coach bus, you know that that's true. We pulled into this mechanic shop, pulled our bus in, and I'm waiting, and this elderly gentleman, probably in his 70s, came out, blue jumpsuit, I mean, just grease all over him, you know, and he's just sitting there with this towel, slowly cleaning the grease off his hands, and I'm explaining to him that we're this nonprofit, and we do this anti-bullying thing, and he just looks at me, and he just starts calling me these names, like, these three names over and over, and I'm like, I don't get this. Like, I'm here trying to get my bus fixed, and you're calling me these names. And he goes, "Those are the names that I was called in middle school and in high school."
Wow.
70 years old. He can remember the name. Mm-hmm. He can remember the place. He can remember the face because it sticks with you. Those things shape what you become. They shape the outcome of your life. So the goal of our show is to create an empathetic response where somebody can recognize there is a world outside of myself. And if I can take my concern off of myself for a second and see that the way that I treat someone else will shape the outcome of their life and in return actually shape the outcome of my life, that's huge. Mm. And that's the response that we've actually seen. We, in one school, I actually just got a call, give a shout out to Mike Mosca, up in Long Island. He's a principal at a school up there. He had a kid in his school who was just, he was a problem kid. He would always be, anytime there was an altercation, anytime there was something going on, this kid was inevitably involved. He saw our show, and at the end of the show, Mike was watching him. He told me this story afterwards. He was watching him, and the kid stood up and started approaching all these people, and Mike's like, oh gosh, what's he gonna do? He started approaching all of the people, and Mike started noticing that these were the people that he had altercations with. And when Mike approached him and started listening, what he found out was that the kid was approaching all of these people and apologizing mm-hmm. for the way that he had treated them. Wow. And Mike has told me that since our show has been there, this kid has become a force for change in his school. Anytime he sees bullying, he grabs those two guys or he grabs those two people, he brings them to the office, he sits them down, and he's like, look, I've been where you are, and this is not the way you need to be working. This is not the way you need to be handling it.
I mean, when you guys go to bed at night,
yeah,
and you're had a real long day, and maybe you didn't get the grants that you wanted,
yeah.
and your kids are driving you absolutely nuts, that story alone has got to just allow you to sleep well and being like, we've done well.
Mm-hmm.
We've responded to the call.
The call
that was given to us, just to have that one kid's life change, and not just his life change, but now influencing others.
Oh, absolutely.
And really standing up against bullying.
Yeah.
And having the courage to do that. Because there's a moment in the play, and I don't want to give everything away because you guys all have to come see it, especially this Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Jensen Beach High School. But that there is a moment in the play where the popular guy
mm-hmm.
Has a moment or an offer of transformation
yes.
where he can be, and he's the influencer, and he's the one who's the Instagram guy who's got all the followers. He's
yep.
the big athlete, and he has that moment to do it. So, and can we talk a little bit, just without giving too much away though, about the victim in the play,
mm-hmm.
right? The victim of the play, because that is, to give the audience just a little bit about the story itself,
yeah.
is that we're following. Even though he doesn't have a prominent role, we're following this kid
yep.
who's just really getting battered by the kids in the school.
Yeah.
All the kids, not just the popular kids, not just the, you know, the grungy kids, not just
yeah.
the athletes, but everyone really is taking their time.
Yeah. He's become the easy out for people to if they need to make fun of somebody, or if they're trying to gain favor with someone else, they'll make fun of him. He just becomes the scapegoat for everybody because it's easy. And and you'll find that person in every single school, and it doesn't matter whether it's a kid who, you know, at one time happened to wet his pants and never outlived it, or, you know, he just didn't have the right clothes on that day and never lived it down. Whatever it is that put him – like when we go into our workshops, we take like 100 kids after this school. We'll have 100 kids come into our workshop, and we'll hand out these cards. Every kid gets a card, and 30% of those cards have a little dot on it. And we separate – once we're in the middle, you know, doing the workshop, we just hand them out randomly. We'll separate them, and 70% will be on one side, 30% will be on the other, and we'll say, look, these are the 30% of kids who would say that they are bullied on a regular basis. They did nothing to actually get themselves here. How are they supposed to get themselves out?
Hmm.
How are they going to get themselves out? But yet every single song that's on the radio says, I want to see you be brave. You need to be bulletproof. You need to do this. You need to do that. There's no songs out there that say, stop what you're doing and go and help another person. Go and speak kindly to another person. Include them in what you're doing and begin lifting other people out of a situation that they're in. And what we find is that it's easier to just step on people and they become the scapegoat. They just become easy. So the show doesn't focus on him directly. And so what you find is that The show follows four characters, four students through an average day at their school. You have the all-star, you have the prom queen, you have the new girl, and you have what we call the victim character. Those are generalization terms. We don't follow it that way. We try to make it so that these are real human beings that are dealing with real issues. And even as we, you know, trained the prom queen, her name is Paula, I talked to her during her monologue, and I say, look, this is almost like a jury. When you get up and you do the monologue and the spotlight is on you, you're starting by telling the jury what happened. You're showing them exactly what happened. And then it switches halfway through and you're pleading your case. Your lawyer is pleading your case. You're saying exactly why. And then at the end of it, you're talking to the jury, and the cast the audience is the jury. And they're going to decide. And I said, at the end of this, they're probably not going to like you, but they need to understand you. Mm-hmm. And that's our goal. Our goal isn't, you're not going to like the prom queen at the end. You may not like the all-star. You might not even like the victim character, but the goal is to understand. It's not to like.
Right.
It's to create a sense of empathy going, okay, the victim is the stereotypical kid who is bullied. But every single one of us deal with those same insecurities. What I felt as a child in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, I was so ridiculed and so destroyed. I was short. I was fat. I was awkward. I didn't quite get, you know, my own body. I didn't quite get or understand what was going on in my life. And there was even abuse, like things that people don't know about that shape a human being, mm-hmm. that you just need to go, whoa, let's have some grace. Let's have some mercy. Let's have some compassion, some love for other people, and create a world that has understanding and inclusion instead of they're different than me. They can't swing a bat. They can't throw a ball. They can't cheer. They don't drive. They don't this. You know, all of those things, and we create these groups where we feel comfortable. Mm. This person's like me. This person's like me. But then you find that person who's not like, and it's not right that we say, you're not like anyone else, so you're alone.
Mm-hmm. Where our guest today is Dan Bird from All Access Productions, who he and his wife have a show called Speak Life the Musical, which will be in schools throughout this area of Florida, and also will be having their first public performance this Tuesday. And I'm assuming the shows will be on the All Access Productions.
They are on our website, speaklife.org.
Speaklife.org.
Speak Life the Musical. Sorry, speaklifethemusical.org.
Before we go to break for this, how is there, where is the hope that you see for our kids today that you have seen through working on this musical, where when you're doing the musical, you're like, I think there could be, because kids have been getting bullied forever.
Right? Yeah,
bullying,
absolutely.
Adults have been bullied. I mean, we're all bullied. And we're a tribalistic, you know, race of human beings, mm-hmm. who like to tribe up. It gives us security, and especially if it involves, you know, bullying someone else, it gives us some kind of...
Since the days of Pharaoh.
Even before the days of Pharaoh.
Even before the days of Pharaoh.
Yeah, I would say Cain and Abel.
You know, we look at it from a theological, you know, religious perspective, you know, the whole notion of the scapegoat, which, you know, as Jews, we know, unfortunately, all too well. We've always been blamed for challenges. And we go back, you know, biblically, you know, to the days of Pharaoh. I mean, the Israelites, we were bullied by Pharaoh. And it's how we stood our ground and being able to use that in some way to be able to empower us in some way. But we also know the destructive elements of it. It's not pleasant. And, you know, it's how we talk about it, which I think is very interesting given the tone today, mm-hmm. in 2019. You know, I mean, I think every one of our listeners and everyone out there can remember back to their youth of being teased. And I think there's a big difference between being teased,
yes.
and being bullied.
Yes.
And I think that bullying aspect, which is so impactful. I mean, it like you said, it changes and shapes who we are, mm-hmm. whether it be our confidence, whether it be our self-worth. You know, those things have tremendous impact. And I think today in 2019, you know, I think we're doing a better job of at least talking about it and raising it at the forefront. you know, through productions like what you guys are doing, which is incredibly impactful. But then the challenge with it too is how much of it is so in your face today, as opposed to, you know, when we were kids, we were bullied. You know, I went home, cried in my pillow, tried to suck it up, went for another day. But today we have the challenges of cyberbullying, of putting a mask over what we, who we are and what we want to be via social media. There's so many extenuating circumstances. Mm-hmm. But I think, being able to hear others' experiences and to see it in such an impactful way says to others, too, this ain't going away. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. And to you're alluding it just now, Rabbi, about when you were younger, what did you do? You went home, you put your head in your pillow, mm-hmm. maybe hid your tears, bucked up. And I'm sure, Dan, you've gotten this from people being like, well, have kids today just gone soft, right? Are they just more privileged today and just soft? You express your feelings more. But Dan, to your story earlier, you have a 70-year-old guy showing up to you.
Absolutely.
You know, strong blue-collar guy who's working in a mechanic shop who can still to this day recite the words that were used to him. So you could say that people were stronger back then, but you got a 70-year-old dude who still has who's still being affected and has this kind of inner child inside of him that's feeling the beat up. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, continue further more the theological reflection on this of where is the hope found through Scripture and through our understanding of who God is and providing hope in the midst of a lot of bullying that's out there, and some more stats are kind of frightening, and how do we respond as a community for the young ones, but also as adults, because it's bullying knows no age. It can go all over the place. We'll be right back with Dan Bird from All Access Productions. You have reached that midway point of this podcast. You probably thought you would never get to this area, but you're here, and this is great. So if you got here, you might as well like the podcast and comment and share, and also learn about some of the exciting things that are going on at St. Mary's Episcopal Church and over at Temple Beth Haim. So, Rabbi, you have an awesome thing going on this Saturday.
So we do. We have a bunch of stuff going on this Saturday. Tomorrow night we'll have a Blue Jeans Bowl, which will be there are raffle items, there are silent auctions. We have live music by one of our members who's a recording artist. she's coming in with her band. It'll just be a great, great, wonderful evening. It's tomorrow night, starting at 6:30, goes from 6:30 to 9:00, and then of course next Sunday, we will have our third annual interfaith Thanksgiving service, the Sunday just before Thanksgiving at 4 to 6 at Temple Beit HaYam. So if you are interested, we have many churches and synagogues that are represented.
Any mosques?
We have an imam that is joining us.
Boom.
So hopefully for those that
can
are
can you get him on the show?
We can try. We can try.
Do.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot, tons of stuff coming up. December 15th, we got our sixth annual Latke Fest. Check us out, potato pancakes, tons of stuff for as we enter into our Hanukkah season. But, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff coming up.
Awesome. And over at the church on Thanksgiving Day, we actually have a Thanksgiving Day service at 10 o'clock. And we also have a Thanksgiving meal that we serve for the community of Martin County the day before, and also one for the St. Mary's Episcopal Church. So check us out on stmarys-stewart.org, and also come check out this play that's on this podcast, Speak Life the Musical, because your very own, your favorite Christian, will actually be the janitor. That's right. I'm paying them so they would accept me to do this role. Come check it out. Welcome back to the second half of the podcast. Run, don't walk, to the comment section. Peace. All right, welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi. This is Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin here with Dan Bird from All Access Productions for the musical that they have been touring for quite some time, calling Speak Life the Musical, a show that combats bullying and really digs into the hearts and the lives of our young ones, and through the demons they confront a lot of times just in their own walk, and how that can lead to bullying and being bullied. A powerful musical that will be this Tuesday for a public performance over at Jensen Beach High School, 7 p.m. If you the phone number here is 772-220-9788. This the topic today is all about bullying and also about the bystanders who witness the bullying. And why don't we jump in faster enough as just a society? We could just say here in the States. So what is that? Let's parse that out a little bit here, guys, gentlemen. Why do we think? Because the statistics would show from a lot of big anti-bullying websites that when people jump in, whether it's verbally, whether it's physically, whether they do something, that it does ice the situation. That within 7 seconds, some say 10 seconds. Again, I have no idea how they get this data. But let's just roll with it. That when you do jump in, you say something, it is effective. So I think the obvious reasons would be with fear that you will. There'll be retaliation against you.
Absolutely.
Is it all fear, or is there something? Is there a bit of like lackadaisicalness, or is it all just another part of like, wow, just so glad that wasn't me? So is there kind of joy, and also you get to feel like you're kind of part of the club and get to watch this bullying or something.
But I also wonder too, you know, with the for those that bully, right? Are we bullying others because the things that we're bullying others about, it's like that adage that says, the things I hate about other people are actually the things that I hate about myself. Mm-hmm. And just not being able to recognize the challenges, the internal struggles and challenges that I face within myself. So if I can't come to terms with my own internal struggles, I'm going to forcefully exude that to others.
Right.
But I want to be honest. I mean, kids are bullied in middle school and high school that I was more like a class clown, I guess, if you were to give me the archetype.
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
Shocking. Right. So I mean, I lay my sin in front of you guys now. I mean, if I joined in on some of the like communal bullying, it was more that for me to get a laugh.
Yeah.
Right? So it was more or less like it wasn't really.
But was it because inside you just wanted to make people happy and make them laugh?
I think it was just more of just for people to probably like me, just exactly. To be so I could feel it. Exactly. I don't think it was something vindictive, or something like I hated about the kid.
But the reality of what happens is you were stealing something from that kid to try and gain it for yourself.
Absolutely.
You were stealing respect from him to gain respect for yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it didn't come from this.
You were lacking in your self-respect. You were lacking in something in order to try and steal it from him.
Sure. But I don't know if it was like I hated. There was
which
nothing
is the point
that
you were making before. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. Because it's not like I was looking at this kid and there was something that I hated about him that reminded about something in me. Because what you're saying is, Rabbi, is that a lot of times we're critical of people we're critical of ourselves for that same reason. But I think sometimes it's also, well, that person is just the scapegoat and you want to look good in front of these girls and you can use your humor and
absolutely.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yes, but also you look at your example and it may not have been the things that I hate about myself, but, you know, as we discussed, the things that I want to get from ridicule for somebody else. So what is it really saying? I mean, you know, there's a part that says it's about also fitting in. I don't want to be on the periphery. I don't want to be on the outside. If I'm part of it, it means that I'm now part of this other community that has embraced me through the ridicule and the challenges of somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead, Dan.
Let me break it down. We try and break it down this way. We have we look at it as 20% of kids would say that they're bullied. 10% of kids would say that they are, you know, the bully. And that leaves 70% of kids who would call themselves the bystander. They're the people who go, look, I don't get bullied. I don't really bully anybody else. I just don't get involved. The 10% or the 20% of kids that would say that they're bullied, it's not like they're bullied all the time. It's not like they just go, I am the victim of everything. You know, and I think you could probably break it down in your own life and say, I'd say probably 20% of the time I would be a victim of bullying. 10% of the time, I'm probably the guy that's doing it, either joking or things like that. And 70% of the time, I just go, thank God that is not me right now.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to get involved, you know? And I'm a 44-year-old man. I have, you know, a kids and a wife and a life, and I still at times question, should I step in and say something right now?
Right, absolutely.
You know? And so, and I do what I do, you know? So you'd think I would be the guy that's just going, no, 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 you know?
Don't do that around Dan. You know, how about him?
But the reality is this. You see these shows on TV where they stage, like in a diner, they stage like this husband and wife having an argument, and the husband is being verbally abusive to the wife, and everybody around, you know, it's that like TV show where they're showing the things that are happening and everybody around is just looking, and finally one person stands up and goes over and says something,
right?
And then the cameras come out and they show, well, why did you feel the need to stand up and say something? I often look at those things and I go, would I do that?
Sure.
Would I be the one to, you know, if somebody's berating somebody behind the counter, you know, oh, you didn't make my sandwich right, or whatever it is, and then starts slurring or, you know, doing all these things to the, I don't know. I think in that moment, yes, I would. But I look at some of these other nuanced moments and I'm like, whew, I can kind of see in myself whether or not I would or would not.
It's a good moment of honesty for all of us to have with ourselves and not be the ones as quickly say, oh, I would definitely do that,
absolutely,
right? So let's get Daniel here. Daniel just called in. Daniel, welcome to A Priest and a Rabbi. We're here with Dan Bird and we're talking about bullying. What you got for us?
Morning. Well, it actually pairs on actually what you're talking about and relating it more to scripture. And it's the idea of those people, those witnesses, those people that intervene, and those that don't. You know, the whole concept of do not stand idly by, but what happens when they do? You know, and the only example is, you know, you talk about you being the class clown. I was maybe the person that saw it sometimes, even if it was harmless, it clearly hurt somebody. And literally 30 years later, I still think about one incident that I thought about reaching out to that person. But that idea, I stood idly by. So whether it's a clerical response or a liturgical response, I'm curious what thoughts are on that. Like what the role is of that bystander who stood idly by, and what their responsibility is after the fact.
Daniel, can you thank you for calling in, by the way. Can you remember about why, when you were there in school, why you didn't jump in? What were the thoughts through your head?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it was right before a class began. A kid was teasing someone else about their weight. The girl started crying, and I remember thinking, okay, the teacher's going to come in any moment and they'll stop it, right? And it was partially age. Mm. You know, I was probably in seventh grade or so, but I remember thinking that. But it stuck with me. It impacted me well into my adulthood, and I'm a father now myself, so.
Hey, was there fear at the time? Were you just like, well, the teacher will get it, or I don't have the authority to do this, or am I confident enough to do it? I mean,
I think it's confidence. I think it's a seventh grader and that social aspect. If I step in, what happens? You know, it happened very quickly.
Sure.
But I'm sure all those things play into effect, the social structure.
And also the challenges, too, of if I do step in, what are the repercussions?
Absolutely.
Am I going to be physically abused? Mm-hmm. In some way through an act of violence?
Right.
Will I be put on the periphery and suddenly my social status will change and people will see me in a different way?
That's a big one, yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, from a Jewish perspective, I mean, we're told, you know, do not ridicule others. I mean, it's one of the, but we're also human, and I think that there are times that it does happen. But, you know, I love the response of, you know, what is our responsibility?
Right.
How do we go about it to make these challenges less.
Daniel, has that event, because you clearly it stuck with you all these years, has that event affected your actions in your current life, or how you've been a father to your own children?
Yes, definitely. And it's actually, this is an event that I've talked about with peers, people that went to school with me, and do they think I should contact this person?
Wow.
You know, it's really. It has definitely affected me as how I've carried through my life, as well as, you know, for my daughter.
Well, let me encourage you, Daniel. There was a girl that we grew up with on our street, and a group of us ridiculed her so bad that she actually cried and ran home. Her and her sister, they cried and ran home. They lived on another block. I would say probably 20 years later, I'm having a party at this place with my son, and she came in. It was a birthday party, and we were going to this birthday party. So we went to this birthday party. She showed up, and I saw her, and I approached her, and I said, look, I remember this time where we ridiculed you so bad that you cried and you ran away. And I said, I want you to know, I am so sorry that I ever did that to you. I had no right to do that to you. Would you please accept my apology? And she began crying. She remembered. She knew exactly what I was talking about. When she walked in the room, she knew who I was. Like, it was 20 years later. I hadn't thought about it, you know, for a whole lot. And when she walked in, I was like, immediately, I have to make this right. So I made it right with her. And she just looked at me. She's like, thank you so much. You have no idea how much that means to me. So I don't know what she's done in her life and how that impacted her and how that affected her. But I can tell you this, since then, the weight that anytime I would have thought of that incident, there was always a weight to it of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that. Especially doing what I do with bullying. I've had lots of opportunity to rethink all of those moments that have stuck out to me. Since that time of apologizing to her, the weight of that moment is gone. I have not had the weight. And it wasn't until you called in that I actually remembered that moment. And this was probably 10 years ago that I actually said this to her. I haven't thought about it again in 10 years. Because just the simple act of asking for forgiveness, it released her and it released me. So I would just encourage you, you don't need to ask all your peers. You don't need to wait. Reach out to that person and say, look, this was the scenario. And in my own conscience, feel like I did not do the right thing in that moment. And I want to apologize to you for whatever it's worth. Would you forgive me for not standing up and not speaking up and not being a person in your life who could have defended you at that moment and didn't?
Yeah. Great.
Do you still even remember her name?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, now even you calling in and then Dan even speaking this is just, I feel like when I'm a 12-step program right now, this is, well, which step is this to make amends? I'm thinking of the people I could contact in high school. And I've thought about this before, actually. And I actually took a guy out to lunch one time. I found when I was in seminary, I realized he lived with a guy from boarding school. He lived in D.C. too. And we went out to lunch, and I want to kind of organically happen. And I was waiting for something to happen organically. And the conversation was kind of really pleasant the whole time, so I never brought it up. But I had the moment, and I wanted to bring up, like, man, listen, I know that my friends and I were complete you-know-whats, and I just want to apologize. But now you're provoking the same kind of instinct inside of me about who are the people I need to call. But then there's always a thought, and Daniel, I'm sorry, you called in, you might need to go. We're just totally pulling you into this radio show right now.
Listen, I love it.
But that the there's also, I think, sometimes the concern, if I call up to do that, are they going to be a little too late, A, or B, I haven't thought about that at all. Why did you bring that back
but
in my life?
And,
or is
say
this all
the,
about you and the, not about
the,
me?
The secondary one, you know, in terms of, look, I think, if you can recall a memory to which you had not been your best self 20, 30 years earlier, and let's say you run into that person in a social event, right? I'd be willing to bet you that that person to whom was bullied will remember the specific details, and just your physical presence brings them back 20, 30 years earlier.
I've gone through and apologized to a lot of people and never had that response. I've had those thoughts. And it's kept me from calling people when I should have, or reaching out or saying something, just like you did. But anytime I've had that response, it's either been one of two things. It's been, thank you very much for what you just said. Because like Rabbi was saying, he knew, or she knew exactly what I was talking about. Or the response was, oh man, I don't even remember what you're talking about. Don't worry about it. And in that moment, whether they were telling the truth or not, it was irrelevant, because that moment then just became about me doing what my conscience needed in order to relieve itself of the guilt that I felt.
But I think interestingly enough, Dan, especially with the last point you made, right? Oh, don't worry about it. I haven't thought about it in 30 years. Really?
Well, that's on them. I can't.
No, absolutely.
I wonder
how
that.
Much of it too is for us receiving that information of saying, look, somebody apologizing for the way that they may have treated me 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even thought about it. Oh, no, yes, I have. And you know what? I'm not willing or able to say with myself right now, because I think that it is a constant struggle.
And that's okay.
But this is also the other part of forgiveness. Like in Daniel's, let's call the caller Daniel and then our guest Dan.
Yeah.
That in Daniel's thing, Daniel didn't bully. Mm-hmm. Daniel was just having what we've been talking about too is bystanders. Yeah. Bystanders also feel this guilt. There's the bystander guilt. I could have, I should have. So if Daniel finds this girl and calls her, she may be like, I didn't even know you were even there, right? So this would be more about, and this gets into a whole other show about what is forgiveness and why forgiveness. Right. It's forgiveness sometimes is more about us and not about the other person. But for Daniel, it's more about he feels this weight.
Right.
And then as a, Dan, are you a man of faith?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so Daniel's, so for his faith, it worked with him. The rabbi wants to know, are you Jewish?
Yes, I am.
Well, so here we go. So you're a man, you're a man of faith, you're a good Jew, and you go and you talk to this girl and say, I was there, and I didn't bully you, but I witnessed this something that happened, and I'm sorry I didn't step in. I think, my gosh, I probably for that woman might be like, wow, who are you? Can they make more of you these days?
Right.
You know, for someone like you didn't even bully me, but you witnessed it.
And it's gonna show her that she was seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that moment, she felt like no one saw who she really was. They were just
That's
seeing
great.
The outside of her, which that was me. People just saw the outside of me. And I was short. I was fat through 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I was short and fat. I was like 180 pounds. I shopped Husky, you know, the Husky pants.
Are those like big pants?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But in 9th grade, I shot up between 8th and 9th grade to 6 foot and still weighed 180 pounds. I got all the leads in the plays. I got... I was started on our volleyball team. Life
dramatically changed.
Oh my gosh. Not to brag about myself, I dated seniors in 9th grade.
What?
But the
Who
point
is this kid?
Of the point of that is to say, even though I had all of those things, I still saw myself as that short, fat 6th grader. And through a massive turn of events, through this story that I won't even bother telling because it's just too long, but it's a fantastic story, I began to realize people saw me very differently than I saw myself.
Sure.
Because of the words that people spoke over me, I believed the words that people spoke over me. And Brene Brown is a great communicator. She talks about people...
Also an Episcopalian.
She talks about that shame that we feel. And like oftentimes when a kid is bullied, there's two responses. They'll go home and they'll have almost a disgust or an outrage, and they'll tell their parents, I can't believe this person made fun of me. That's an okay moment for a child because they recognize what was said about me isn't in line with what I believe about myself.
Sure.
It's the kid who gets made fun of and comes home and doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are internalizing it. They're the ones that are recognizing, maybe they are right. Maybe what they're saying about me is right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also amazing just those impactful, you know, messages that could be communicated. Remember when I was 16,
mm-hmm.
somebody had said to me in high school, you look really stupid in jeans. I have not worn jeans in 25 or almost 30 years.
Stop it.
This is what I'm talking about. This comment right here, I have heard this over and over and over and over again. And you are the reason we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because for you, it was jeans.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, they don't have children because of it. Mm-hmm. For other people, they stop playing music because of it. For
Absolutely.
Other people, you know, I don't want to put anything on you, but how emotional is it for you to say that?
You know, it's pretty tough. I mean, you know, it's always funny. My wife will make fun of me that I don't wear jeans.
Right.
You know.
Are you saying on
Rabbi
Rose. Are you saying on national radio that your wife is a bully?
My wife sometimes bullies me. But it is.
Does she know the history behind it?
No, but she does.
Rabbi Rose.
There's something really interesting about how that plays out.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we're doing a big event Saturday night called the Blue Jeans Bowl. Right, open to the wider community. It'd be a great night, a lot of music.
This is gonna be a cathartic moment.
I know.
But how did
you get involved in that?
So the interesting thing is, you know, so when our committee and our community decided to do this, they said, "Come see the rabbi in jeans," because it is something that I don't do it often. Maybe if I'm lucky, once a year. But I always feel uncomfortable, and it was all based on a very derogatory comment about you look stupid in jeans. And why don't we just take your legs and throw them in a deep fryer and eat them? It's like chicken wings. I was skinny. I was scrawny. That impact so much. Now, you know, subsequently since then, I mean, you know, the guy who said it many, many, many years ago, you know, our relationship and our friendship severed. I mean, I haven't spoken to the guy in 30 years, and nor do I ever plan on it. But if he were to call me and say, look, I remember I said something to you, would that change the way that I would approach the world? I think the damage, the hurt's been done.
But would it give you some more peace? You know, we've kept Daniel on this radio show this whole time. But but Daniel,
it's a priest, but, a rabbi, Dan and Dan
and Daniel.
Dan and Daniel. So Daniel, perfect. as a good practicing Jew, what's your advice to your rabbi here?
What's my advice?
He says that if the person calls, the damage has already been done. Do you agree with that? That, because that would mean that you should, that rabbi, what you're saying, then probably does, that Danielle shouldn't call this gal.
No. That I'm not saying. I'm saying in a personal moment, if he were to call me and say, I'm really sorry for the comment about the jeans, would it propel me to say, okay, you know what? Thank you. I accept your apology. I can move on.
Honey, let's go to Levi's.
Will I embrace jeans? It's not my thing. But I think that there still is some reconcilable things that we can do,
okay,
that help us and help others through the process to be able to get to that moment of acceptance or even forgiveness. You know, look, we profess it in Judaism. It is so important to look back at the things to whom we have hurt, mm-hmm, knowingly, and the things that we have done to hurt others unknowingly. Now, of course, the unknowing is the unknown. We're not sure. But if we have the inkling of I may have said something and how it was received may have been not the intended way to which I was trying to give it, that's different. You're never going to get me in jeans. Let's just put that out there.
I'm going to call Rabbi Rose, and we're going to get Daniel, the guy who's on the phone here, and we're all going to find out who this guy is, and he's going to call you. And so we can do the blue jeans ball. But we need to do this soon before tomorrow night.
Yes.
Okay. Daniel, we're going to let you go, brother, because we're about to close up the show. Right. Thank you, brother, for so much for calling in.
Thanks,
and anytime you want, it's been great to have you on here. All right. So this has been a great show. And I think one thing I know I'm going to take away from this is really to do a self-reflection of who are the three people you could call that I could call.
Absolutely.
To do this, you know, right? To step into it, because it's a vulnerable, tough position. But I think that's where God calls us, as we know, from a forgiving God. And as a Christian, for sure. I mean, the leading this life of confession and forgiveness, and how we can be models of that. So, Dan, I can't thank you enough for coming here, sharing your story, but also about your play. Can you give us just some good details of where people can find you and also about the show?
Yeah, this Tuesday, November 19th, is going to be at Jensen Beach High School at 7 p.m., and then December 3rd at 7 p.m. at Martin County High School.
And how can they find you online?
SpeakLifeTheMusical.org or AllAccessProductions.org.
You can always find this on the podcast, A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. Until then, go to the Blue Jeans Ball over at the Temple. Peace.